through the exchange. So it's not a mandatory. Yes, well, it works only for the first month, 2 months, but after that, no one cares. Why? Because they just take the price and sell it voluntarily, and it creates disruption in the market as well. So last year, the government said, okay, we're going to make it mandatory. And the effect to the economy was really great. I mean, there has been some allegations on the media, I'm not going to say which media, saying that they're trying to arbitrarily, with a thin intention, they said, to create arbitrarily high prices of tin. We disagree with that. We actually want to argue that at this point of time, tin smelters are enjoying such a, well, I'm not going to say a ridiculous kind of profit, but this is just good for them to do what? Three things. First, you need to do reclamation. If you go to Bangka right now, you'll see pools, like empty pools that are filled with waters, basically coming from mining. Who's going to be responsible for that? Is it going to be the government? And the smelters will say, look, we don't have money at that in the past. We don't even have money to do reclamations or restorations for the lands. And what you see here are holes everywhere. Who's going to be responsible for that? Secondly, these smelters, they don't even have the money back then to do maintenance on their dredges, on their heavy machineries. And they cannot keep up with it. And the third thing, just like in any other mining companies, they need to do explorations. These three things were not able. They were not able to do it in the past. But because of these new exchange systems where people have to trade with the exchange, and one more thing that the government did extra was actually to put a sovereign guarantee on it. I had a very big discussion, argument, in fact, with one of the traders. He was saying, look, but LME has earned its reputation for the past 100 years. And I said, why is that? Well, because LME certified it. They did a 2 years audit trails and everything. And I said, look, that's why I agree with you, LME is doing that. But can't you see that this is actually the government who's actually put the guarantee on it? They even put it in a decree. And one of the things that we are very pleased with that comes with the package of the decree, the Minister of Trade, is saying that the traceability of ore. And then Wall Street, Dodd-Frank Act, they have these conflict minerals costs. They're pretty much, Apple, Samsung, LG, everyone just comes to our office and saying, well, do you have anything for this conflict materials, and what is the traceability of the ore? So one of the things that the exchange together, the government helps, is actually, we didn't know that there's this bonus, which is systematically eradicating illegal mining because of the traceability of the ores. So whenever when people smell and they create the tin inputs, it needs to be accompanied with a certification and traceability of where the ore comes. It creates turbulence in the back. In the first 3 months, when the people were demonstrating, they were like semi-riots in Bangka. But then, in the end of the day, the truth shall prevail, and it helps the government. It helps the economy. And now everybody is happy. They said, look, now we have a stable price. We don't have this volatile price. I mean, if you look at the data, empirical studies shows that prior to ICTX, on a given basis, the average volatility of the price of it, the difference could be up to 35%. But now it's only 5%. And this is within an acceptable range so that they can actually plan what is their cost, what is their revenue. And of course, as a buyer, you'll be more happy. You can actually price your goods at a more stable price. That's just my thing. Thank you.
Certainly a very valuable.
Yeah. May I just one or two of the comments in there to directly play to the building confidence.
that there's a difficulty that we all often face when we're working in derivatives in general, and that's explaining the value and the role that we have within the financial markets and in society. And I think in general we do a pretty poor job of it. Yet I don't actually think it's a difficult thing to say. So whilst I agree completely, again, with some of the points in there, the idea that most people can absorb the concepts of an empirical study and what that shows is difficult to demonstrate. However, I think there are some simple concepts and some simple analogies and questions that can be played out. So I'm hoping McGann can retain the microphone now, because I'm afraid I'm going to play this game with you. So I just wanted to demonstrate that when you go to a party, when you go to a barbecue, when you go to wherever, you meet a member of the press, and you meet a member of the press who's not directly in the industry. So FOW, you understand our business. You don't ask questions the same as a national person in the press world. The national person in the press wants to focus straight in on the sorts of things Bart Shilton will talk about. The problems with speculation. So I'm going to ask you one question again. I'm going to expand on it a bit. But the simple question is, what does Ford do, the motor company? What does Ford do? Hopefully,
kill the mic.
Maybe you can ask somebody else on the panel. Or if they can, if they say, well, what does Ford do?
Build bad motor cars.
Build bad motor cars. That's the classic answer. Build motor cars, but they don't really. I mean, they are a steel importer. They are they're a user of large amounts of power. They are a logistics company for the delivery and the supply of all the instruments. And above and beyond everything else, they're actually a pension company. But that's slightly to one side of it. Everyone thinks of it from the perspective of what do they do? They build motor cars. And when somebody invests in them, and the same when someone invests in a stock in an emerging market, they look at the company and they say, it's a supermarket. The retail's going well, middle classes are growing, I'm going to put some money into that. Well, supermarkets have tiny little margins, and if the electricity price is not well hedged, then their margin's going to be eroded by the change in those prices. The point of the derivatives market in the commodity space and in the financial space is that transfer of risk. So as when you invest in a company and you're a pension fund and they're investing your money for you, it becomes very simple for them to do that because they can say, I will invest in Ford, because they know that Ford has hedged its steel prices, has hedged a lot of its logistics costs. All right, actually, it's a pension fund. Forget that example. But most of those costs get hedged away. So the point of the derivatives markets is to simplify how businesses are run that are actually producing things. So the manufacturing and the agricultural industries get simpler, which means it's much easier to know when I put money into it, or the company spends money, what the return's going to be and what the right investments are. And therefore it becomes easier for the country to grow and put money in the right places. And that's where direct foreign investment comes in. And that's why direct foreign investment wants to see the commodities markets and reach into it. And it will not invest in big ways in countries where it cannot hedge aspects. You do not get project finance deals where they can't lay off portions of those risks. So this is the job of this community in building trust and confidence, is to be able to explain to members of the national press, to the ministers in our countries, to the regulators, that the role that we have is to make it easier to allocate the capital efficiency within the community. Not to bring extra in necessarily, although it may, but to know where to put it effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's certainly the far-reaching impact of commodity exchanges. Just to respond to the point, one of the different countries have address this differently. In some countries, including the developed countries, when you want to strengthen the arms of the seller versus the arms of the buyer, if the buyer has the greater strength, then you do it possibly by creating the state-run companies, right? So most the Australian wheat board and the Canadian wheat board were set up with that in mind, that let the government buy all this wheat and then we will export and we'll ensure that the farmers get the right price. And to some extent it works because there is strength in a bigger organization that can invest in marketing and in quality and in identity preservation of the grain and so on. But it's very difficult in most markets today to mandate anything. In fact, even these big monopolies have been dismantled because they've land up with problems of their own. And I think the good part is to, first of all, from a transparency, it's good if you can mandate it and at least change the habit, because one of the difficulties in markets is the status quo is allowed to prevail because it suits certain participants, and they're the ones, the most entrenched ones, are the ones who do not want the market to change, and unfortunately they are also the ones who have the power to keep the markets the way they are. So sometimes mandates certainly work, and maybe there are other ways to get financial participants into the commodity markets by making it easier for them, even if they have not seen the commodity and so on. So on that point, if there are any other aspects, that how do you build confidence, how do you shake up the current establishment that's inefficient? Are there any other comments?
Again, I think we just add some information that already mentioned by Mr. McKinney, that after the government of Indonesia implemented that such a policy for giving a more chance to the exporter, especially in tin, to be traded to commodity exchange, then it proved that the price of tin certainly higher than before implementing before victory policy. It is written clearly on the screen that our price, tin price, certainly higher than the price in London Metal Exchange and also in the Kuala Lumpur tin market. Before implementing this policy, the price range of tin is approximately 19,000 to 20,000 per metric ton. Then after obligatory tin export market through action, commodity action, then the price goes up till reach 23,000 per metric ton. So, well, as a literary exchange, we feel that this policy is quite effective to encourage the people, welfare people, welfare miner, and so on, and even to the government, because the higher prices, then the higher tax they get.
I just wanted to respond to the seeming need to defend the actions that have been taken around him, and sort of address a comment that I would make to a reporter externally who was looking at this. And I think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of the efficient market hypothesis. So that the sort of fundamental underpinning of most of capital markets is that the market will determine the appropriate way, and that the less controls, the better that becomes. But that was never written with an intention of looking at a short-term micro-environment. That was always written from the aspect of looking at a market over 30 to 50 years. And so with an assumption that the players within that marketplace would be interventionist at times, and that if they were overly interventionist, then the market would get corrected by other means. And that's exactly what's happening here. If you've got a market that you're developing in your country and you need to put controls in to get some standardization and to get some process going, then that should not be something that you need to feel that you have to apologize for from somebody who's done a 101 course in economics and not really understood how that rolls forward. It's more complex than that, it's more subtle than that. So I think the position of where Indonesia has taken itself is a perfectly reasonable position given everything that was coming through, and that there's nothing here to defend. It's a perfectly okay step in the evolution of this market.
Yeah.
I think I have seen this the mandate concept quite closely in Ethiopia, and my observation about the mandate concept is it works very fine when it is mandated for the commodities, or the commodities for which it is mandated rather. But there is a spillover effect. The commodities that are not mandated, people by design stop trading those commodities on the exchange and would wait for the commodities to be mandated on the exchange. So it has a positive impact on the commodity that is mandated. A lot of benefits come out of that. But there is a negative side to it, that you eliminate the commodities that are not mandated, and people take it as, unless and until I am not forced to go into that market, I would not go into that market. So there is an impact on the confidence of the market as a whole, or the market as a whole, and that sometimes affects and say restricts the exchange to the commodities that are mandated. Mandating, of course, sometimes it is required to structure the market in a proper way to bring the balance back to the to center. But there has to be a migration plan. If you look at Ethiopia right now, the volume of commodity that are mandated and the percentage of volume of the commodity that are not mandated, it's about 99.9% volume comes from commodities that are mandated. So the confidence in the commodity that are not mandated has not been able to generate. And sometimes as an exchange also you feel it much comfortable. It's the government doing the business development work for me. It's mandating the commodities, so why do I go and sweat myself to actually bring in volumes and build that confidence in the market for commodity that are not mandated. So it has to be a very balanced decision, in my opinion.
Any other question?
I'd like to comment. I think the idea of having the government imposing the rules is not to strangle the markets, but it's not to really strangle the market or make people's life harder, trying to get Indonesia's thin or anything like that. But this is, and we really, when we actually make the contract, we really put extra attentions, not just to really streamline the logistic process and the warehousing and talking to other parties that have been involved in the business for a long time, and we have actually been giving them what we call a test period for a few months. This is just a little background about the TIN contract. Why is our prices higher than LME? Of course, it is higher. It's not because that we want to push it higher, it's because we have a higher purities. So there is a systematically inbuilt premium on the TIN contract itself. And of course, with the lower impurities, then it commands premium over the LME markets, which is about $150 to $200 per metric tons. And the funny, the thing is that we're sitting in neighboring countries, very, very large. They used to have 10 minings. They still have a smelting and refining companies. But what happened here is that a country only produces 200 tons of tin ore, but they export 34,000 tons of their brands. Where does it come from? Does it come from the sky? Or did they just find another new tin ore deposits? I don't think so. So what has happened in the past is that there were many subprime tins that got exported outside of Indonesia. And And this is literally not benefiting the country or the economy. Yes, only it only benefits for some people, of course, some the other countries, but not for Indonesia. So that is why the mandate was very clear. Everything has to be standardized. It has to reach a certain minimum so that it creates the maximum benefits for the economy and for the people.
Sure. I think it's been a great discussion. I have another 5 minutes. Yeah. Maybe 5-7 minutes. I think James is in a hurry to catch his flight. Begin to wind down. I think the point is to make sure that the ecosystem is conducive to the participants actually kickstarting a platform rather than letting the status quo remain. And I guess to whatever requires to be done to shift the participants to the platform that builds transparency, provides benefit to the individuals as well as the country, it is a good step. And there may be many different ways of doing it, and it's good to try all possible ways to encourage the change to happen. And I think wherever it's happened, the benefits are very clear. So non-transparent markets are certainly very, very dangerous, and we've seen that, for example, even in things like where a government is procuring proteins or chickpeas for a midday meal scheme, which you would think is a noble sort of pursuit. The track record of 5 years of that purchase is fraught with collusion, with prices, with some known parties winning the tender every time and bad quality being bought by the government and then fed into the system. So the moment transparency has been introduced, it's changed the face of what type of product is bought at what cost and then what the children get to eat. So I think, you know, in many ways these markets provide wealth to the country at one end and really good nutritious food to children at the other. So that's, I think, so a lot of us who may be in the business and wondering whether we're doing God's work or not, you can be confident we are in some ways. So with that, I'd like to thank my panelists and just a round of applause for them, please.
Thank you to Vijay for steering us almost to the end. We have one more item. I'm going to call on Rod to come forward and perhaps give us a summary, a wrap up, words of wisdom, certainly to send us on our way to cocktails. Hopefully, with a smile on our face. And for all these comments earlier about grey haired people and no gadgets, I see he's prepared his notes on a tablet, so.
And forgive me if I don't know how this thing works. My son-in-law told me I needed to have this. So good afternoon to old AFM friends and to new AFM friends. The distance between the opening comments and the closing comments of the AFM conference seems to get shorter every year. However, it was a long time ago, 1996, that we had the first very informal discussions in Johannesburg, which led to the formation of the AFM.
Yes.
Never in my wildest dreams at that stage did I think that in 2014 I would be in Bali at the 17th annual conference of the resultant association. The first annual conference of this association took place in Budapest in 1998, following a meeting in Buenos Aires. The past 16 annual conferences have all been memorable in their own right, and 2014 is no exception. In my very biased opinion, the AFM is one of the finest associations in the world. So permit me a few closing remarks and I certainly do not plan.
Shut it out. The
word just there. I do not plan to summarize each of the seven very fine panels, but permit me to extract just a few pertinent points. I thought it was very amusing that the minister, in his most refreshing and informative address, noted that whether prices went up or down in Malaysia, he was to blame. Mr. Minister, let me assure you, you are not alone. Every one of us who've been involved in exchanges have been there. We are always to blame. I, for one, never realized that Indonesia consisted of 17,000 islands. But I do have three questions. One, who counted them? Two, does the number change in high tide? And three, are you sure it's 17,000? Is it not 16,999? Or maybe 17,002? In panel one, Nico gave us a definition of risk. Risk, he said, is not knowing what you are doing. Let me add, knowing what you are doing might be, or knowing what you are not doing might be less risky. But sometimes knowing what you are doing can be very risky, whether if you're dealing with technical analysis, fundamental analysis, or just feelings. So, looking at the Southeastern Asian landscape, panel two introduced us to concepts of cooperability and co-offerability. Those are new words. I used to know what cooperation means in collaboration. Cooperability and co-offerability. We've almost got to cohabitation, but living with four regulators in Singapore sounds a little too polygamous to me. Close to my heart was one of the conclusions that emerged from round table number three. Remember what the ultimate objectives of an exchange are. The chase for the quick buck could well distort and pervert. Keep the flame of integrity burning. There is a place for smaller exchanges, thank goodness. Focus, flexibility, and education may well be the keys to the success thereof. The old farts, Paul Meyer and myself, are firmly committed to value add as the fundamental premise for the success of an exchange, big or small. Last night, what a gala evening. My personal highlights, food and wine taken as given. My good friend Chip singing Blue Moon. The Balinese fire dancers, especially the cultural dancers, and the Scottish can-can. And Paul and Evelyn dancing in the moonlight. Thanks to the energy panel for turning the lights on for me as regards energy markets. You're supposed to laugh there, turning the lights on. No real shocking revelations. Shocking revelations. Yeah. But certainly appreciate the current thinking on the matter.
And it was sparky as well, wasn't
it? Oh, it was. Thank you. Okay. Both positives and negatives, but I will remain neutral on the matter. Thank you very much. Now, there's been little humour, and Paul said, I've got to tell at least one joke. Yeah. So let me tell a joke, and please excuse me if you find it a little bit risque, but it's got something to do with energy, mostly with natural gas. Okay. So this gentleman had a problem, and his problem was flatulence. For those of you who don't know English, flatulence is the passing of gas. Okay, commonly referred to something like so he went to the doctor, and the doctor said to him, so what's your problem, sir? And he said, every time I move, I pass gas. So the doctor said, well, come over here and lie on the couch, please. So he went across to the couch. Climbed up on the couch. The doctor said to him, please raise your left leg. Please raise your right leg. He said, sit up. Raise your right arm. Raise your left arm. and the doctor walked across the room and got the pole with a great big hook on it. And the guy said, "Geez, doctor, what are you going to do now?" He said, "I'm going to open the window. Let me stinks in here." So I take my hat off to Jonathan for being prepared to chair a panel on the media and expose himself to the wrath of the exchanges. But we were all very kind of you, Jonathan. And in return, we expect a very complimentary article on the AFM and the conference here in Bali. And for free subscriptions, you can go and see it. What's the money? So moral hazards, Paul. Sometimes I think we should talk about immoral hazards. Seems to me that it's more hazardous to be immoral than to be moral. But I was very pleased to hear that it's not only in Africa where indicator lights on a car are superfluous. Sticking to an automobile theme, Jeremy Clarkson of Top Gear always tells me or would argue that there is a need for speed. It would seem to me that in the exchange world there is a need for greed. But I think what we need is a speed, greed, regulator that could well prevent unnecessary crashes on the roads, markets. Belgians are apparently born with bricks in their stomachs. Exchange developers just need plain guts. Keeping it real is probably the biggest asset that we can bring to the market. In building confidence in the market, we can all play a role. Good regulators, good reporters, good exchange officials, and good technology suppliers. I hope I haven't missed anybody out. Final point, delivery was noted as a core of the success of the development of exchanges. This 17th conference certainly delivered. Thanks are due to our conference, to our supporters for this conference, ICDX, Golf, Gala Dinner, together with Clearing, JFX, Opening Dinner and Sightseeing, JSE conference badges, SOFOA, Swiss Futures and Options Association for the photos, and Tithex and Keller CCP for the coffee breaks. Please put your hands together and thank all our sponsors. Thanks to Chairman Sturgis, I've always wanted to call him that, and the board of the AFM. Thanks to Christy, well supported by her husband, Zolt. And Rekha, please convey our thanks to Rekha when you get back, and our greetings to her. To our hosts, ICDX and JFX, many thanks for all your hospitality. I think we will all remember the 17th conference of the AFM very, very fondly. To all of you who made the trip, some from a long way, some from around the corner, thank you very much. For you who participated, thank you. To those who we will not see tomorrow on the sightseeing trip, go well. We hope to see you either in Geneva at the SOFOA conference in September or next year in April at the 18th annual conference of the AFM in Poland. May the AFM continue to go from strength to strength. I thank you.